Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 41.
The 41st chapter.
The one titled, Mind Monkey Suffers Defeat by Fire, Wood Mother is Captured by the Demon. Quite a title.
Sun Wukong and Zubaji, they've just left Shaw Monk behind.
Right.
And they find themselves at this really striking place, the Huoyun Cave, Fire Cloud Cave.
Hmm. It's in the Kusan Creek, that's Withered Pine Creek on Hell Mountain.
And the text, it paints this almost dreamlike picture, doesn't it? It talks about a revolving ancient road, secluded and quiet.
Yeah, a place where even the wind and moon also listen to the mysterious cranes playing. Sounds lovely.
It sounds like a hidden paradise, almost. Total tranquility. But, well, things are rarely what they seem, right?
That beauty, that initial impression, it serves as such a powerful contrast to the chaos and danger that's actually inside.
Good point.
It's a classic narrative trick, really. Sets up this expectation of peace.
Only to shatter it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That stillness could even be seen as, you know, a deceptive calm before the storm. Really heightens the drama.
Absolutely. And Sun Wukong, he doesn't exactly knock politely, does he?
Huh. No, not his style.
He makes his presence known, big time.
Yeah.
Roaring at the cave entrance for the small ones, the little demons,
sure.
To release Tang Sanzang immediately. Or else, and this is a direct quote, he will overturn your mountain and flatten your cave.
Wow. Talk about a forceful entrance.
Right. You can just feel the raw power, the absolute resolve in those words.
And that declaration, it really just highlights Sun Wukong's incredible power, doesn't it?
Mm.
And his total commitment to protecting his master.
No doubt about his intentions.
Or his capabilities.
Yeah.
The language leaves no room for doubt.
And the reaction from these junior demons, it's almost funny.
They freak out.
Totally terrified. They scramble back inside, slam the stone door shut, and just breathlessly tell their king about this. Hairy-faced, thunder-mouthed monk.
You can picture it. The wide-eyed panic.
Yeah. Yeah. What does that immediate fear tell you about Sun Wukong's reputation, even among these low-level guys?
Oh, it speaks volumes. It shows the legend that precedes him.
Mm-hmm.
Even these minor players in the demon world know exactly who he is.
They know the power.
They know the power, and they know the potential consequences of getting on his bad side. It shows just how far his reputation, his past exploits, have spread.
Okay, so now the Demon King, his reaction is interesting.
How so?
Well, he hears this frantic report, and he instantly knows, ah, Sun Wukong and Zubaji.
So he was expecting them.
Sort of seems like it, but he's mildly surprised they found him so fast. It was only 150 lot. That's about, what, 75 kilometers from where Tang Sanzang was nabbed?
Hmm. So maybe he underestimated their determination or how easy he was to track.
Could be.
That little bit of surprise, it does hint that he maybe knew they were coming, just not quite this soon. Makes you wonder about the Demon Information Network, doesn't it?
It really does. And then, oh, here comes a really grim detail.
Mm.
The Demon King, Mr. Hospitality himself, was actually in the middle of preparing Tang Sanzang for dinner.
Oh, no. Seriously?
Yep. The poor monk was stripped, bound, washed clean, all ready for the steamer.
Yikes. That definitely ramps up the tension.
Immediately. It feeds such a stark picture of the danger Tang Sanzang's in, makes Sun Wukong's arrival incredibly urgent.
The stakes just shot way up. Couldn't be much higher.
But instead of just charging out, the Demon King uses this peculiar initial tactic.
Okay.
He tells his minions to bring out 5 small carts.
Carts? What for?
Well, Zubaji, ever the optimist, or maybe just conveniently dense.
Yeah, probably the latter.
He thinks the demon is scared, trying to move his valuables out. But Sun Wukong, he's instantly suspicious. He knows this is weird.
Zubaji's take is kind of funny, but it really highlights his, let's say, lack of strategic depth compared to Sun Wukong.
Right. Sun Wukong's more cautious, more perceptive. His suspicion just underlines that things are rarely simple in the demon world.
You always have to look deeper.
And Sun Wukong's instincts, bang on, these aren't just any carts.
Do it.
The little demons carefully arrange them according to the 5 elements, you know,
mm-hmm.
Metal, wood, water, fire, earth.
Ah, okay. The Wuxing.
Exactly. And the Demon King specifically orders them guarded. So this definitely points to something more than just moving stuff. It feels deliberate, magical.
Absolutely. The 5 elements are foundational in Taoism, representing these fundamental energies, the interconnected forces of the universe.
They're not just materials, right? They're dynamic principles.
Precisely. Creation, interaction, destruction. Arranging them like that strongly hints at some kind of ritual, maybe a magical formation, to harness those elemental powers, likely setting up for an attack.
Makes sense. Now let's talk about the Demon King himself. When he finally comes out, Wow. The description is something else.
Yeah. What's he like?
He has a face like powder, three parts white, lips like vermilion, brows like new moons.
So quite striking looking.
Very. He's wearing this ornate battle skirt, but interestingly, no armor. And he's got this fiery spear 18 feet long.
18 feet. That's huge.
Right. And the text says he radiates this auspicious light. It even compares him to the deity Neza.
Oh, comparing him to Neza. That's significant.
Why is that? What does that suggest?
Well, Neza is this really powerful, sometimes rebellious figure in Chinese mythology, often linked with divine power, youth, and specifically mastery over fire. So that comparison immediately positions this demon king as a major force. It suggests a similar kind of inherent power, maybe even that same fiery temperament. He sounds less like a brute, more like a formidable, almost divine warrior.
And his voice and eyes just add to it. Voice like thunder, eyes like lightning, intense.
Definitely building an intimidating presence.
And then we get the name reveal. Hunsi?
Red Boy.
Red Boy. And the text explicitly says this is a name known throughout history.
Yeah, the name itself, Red Boy, carries those connotations, right? Youthful energy, fire. And the text, stressing his historical renown, just immediately establishes how important he is, the weight of his reputation in the story.
Okay, so here's where it gets really juicy. Red Boy comes out, totally arrogant, challenges Sun Wukong straight up.
As you'd expect.
But Sun Wukong tries. Well, a pretty unexpected tactic. He tries to play the family card.
The family card, how?
He reminds Red Boy about that earlier time, remember? When Red Boy disguised himself as that pathetic little kid to trick Tang Sanzang.
Oh, right, the fake capture.
Yeah. So Sun Wukong brings that up.
Sun Wukong definitely knows Red Boy strong, so trying to talk his way out first seems prudent.
Makes sense.
Plus, you know, family ties, social hierarchy, that stuff carries real weight in this context. So invoking a brotherhood. Yeah, maybe a chance to diffuse things.
And then he goes even further. He claims brotherhood with Red Boy's father, the Bull Demon King.
Whoa!
And he even lists off their supposed sworn brothers, all with these incredible titles, like the Zhao Demon King, the Peng Demon King, Lion Camel King, Macaque King, Yurong King.
Wow, that's quite the lineup.
Isn't it? And Sun Wukong says he's the seventh brother. He gives the Bull Demon King the title Great Sage Who Pacifies Heaven.
Pacifies heaven, nice.
Zhao Demon King is great sage who calms the sea. Peng Demon King, great sage who confuses heaven. Lion Camel King, great sage who moves mountains.
Okay, these are seriously impressive titles.
Macaque King is great sage who knows the ways of changes. And Yurong King is great sage who drives away gods. Just the titles alone tell you about their power, right? Their legendary status.
For sure. And that whole sworn brotherhood idea is huge in Chinese culture and stories.
How so?
It signifies these bonds that are often seen as just as strong, maybe even stronger, than blood ties. It implies loyalty, mutual support, shared destiny.
So Sun Wukong's trying to tap into that cultural value.
Exactly. He's hoping Red Boy would respect that kind of alliance, even one involving his father. That might be, let's say, creatively presented.
Yeah, creatively presented is a good way to put it. But Red Boy, he is not buying it. Not for a second.
I imagine not.
He just erupts, furious, flatly denies any relationship like that, points out how absurd it is given they're totally different beings, different origins.
A swift shutdown.
Brutal rejection of the whole diplomatic effort. Why do you think he reacts so violently to the idea?
Well, it's likely a mix of things. Pride, for one,
right.
Maybe he genuinely doesn't know about any alliance his father made.
Possible.
And he might see Sun Wukong, you know, the rebel monkey king, as someone beneath his family's status, unworthy of being linked to his powerful dad.
Lineage pride.
Yeah, and stressing their different origins really underlines his own strong sense of identity. Maybe even a bit of disdain for Sun Wukong's past issues with heaven.
Right, his reputation again. So diplomacy fails spectacularly. Goes up in smoke, you could say.
Literally, soon enough.
Exactly. And it immediately breaks down into a fierce battle. The text describes this incredible fight up in the clouds, mist everywhere, obscuring the three realms, clouds lighting up the whole place.
Sounds epic.
Yeah.
The scale must have been breathtaking.
Just thinking about it, what exactly are the three realms in this context?
So in this mythology, the three realms usually refer to the heavens, where the gods live, the earth for humans and other creatures, and the underworld, the realm of the dead.
Okay.
So describing the battle affecting all three just underscores how cosmically significant this fight is, the sheer power these two wield.
Got it. And while these two titans are clashing up there, down below, Zubaji is watching.
When he's not running for his life, he can be surprisingly observant.
Huh. True. He notices something important. He sees that while Red Boy is definitely holding his own, he's mostly defensive, parrying, blocking Sun Wukong's constant attacks. Sun Wukong, meanwhile, is all offense, staff always aimed at Red Boy. Sun Wukong's relentless offense points to that mastery of close combat.
Yeah, that relentless fighting style he has.
And then, classic Zubaji move.
Oh no, what does he do?
He decides to jump in, but not really to help Sun Wukong clinch the win.
Let me guess. He wants the glory.
Bingo. He impulsively charges in with that big nine-toothed rake, apparently hoping to steal the victory for himself.
That is so typically him. Quintessential Zubaji. Self-serving, looking for personal gain, not really thinking it through.
A recurring theme.
Definitely. He sees what looks like an easy win, jumps in, even if it messes up Sun Wukong's whole strategy.
Unsurprisingly, Red Boy isn't thrilled about getting double-teamed.
Can't blame.
He makes a strategic retreat back towards his cave entrance, but this isn't him giving up.
No, it feels like a tactical move. Repositioning.
Exactly. A prelude to his really devastating counterattack.
Right. He's pulling them onto his home turf where he has the advantage.
And what an advantage it is. His counter, it's pretty unsettling.
Go on.
He hits his own nose, recites some kind of spell.
Hits his nose.
Yeah. And then unleashes this terrifying flood of fire and thick smoke from his mouth, his nose, his eyes, and deed from those five carts.
Whoa. So that's what the carts were for.
Must be. The text says red flames burning the sky. The whole fire cloud cave area is just engulfed in this apocalyptic inferno.
Intense.
Even Zubaji, who's seen some stuff, totally panics, just flees, terrified of being cooked.
Hitting his nose sounds like some kind of ritual trigger. Mm-hmm. And Zubaji running like that, it really tells you how terrifyingly intense these flames must be.
Totally. Now, Sun Wukong, he doesn't back down easily. He tries using a fire-repelling spell, charges right into the blaze trying to find Red Boy.
Brave, but maybe foolish.
Turns out, yeah, even the great sage is forced back. The fire is just too powerful, too consuming, and the smoke is so thick, choking, he can't even see the cave entrance.
Wow, so even Sun Wukong couldn't handle it.
Not this fire. And then we get the exclamation. This is Red Boy's Samadhi fire.
Samadhi fire. Okay, that sounds important.
It is. The text stresses it's not from striking wood or alchemic refining. It's not heavenly fire, not wildfire, but something unique. A demonic fire cultivated to truth.
Demonic fire cultivated to truth. What does that imply about its nature, its power?
What do you think?
Well, cultivated to truth suggests it's been refined, amplified through serious demonic spiritual practice. It implies deep mastery control over this element.
Making it way stronger than normal fire.
Exactly. Much more potent, maybe harder to put out than natural fire or even standard magic flames.
Right.
It's proof of Red Boy's advanced demonic power.
And the origin story is fascinating. Those five carts, the five elements, This Samadhi fire is generated and amplified through their cycle. Wood feeds fire, fire makes earth, ash, earth holds metal, metal carries water like condensation, water nourishes wood.
Ah, the generating cycle of the Wuxing.
It's this continuous, self-fueling, incredibly powerful loop of elemental energy.
A self-sustaining furnace, basically.
Pretty much. And the text even says this fire is linked to the flourishing of all things, which is kind of surprising for something so destructive.
That connection, it highlights the duality of the five elements, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Fire destroys, yes, but it's also vital for growth, transformation in that cycle.
So Red Boy's mastery isn't just about power.
It represents a really deep understanding, a manipulation of these fundamental cosmic forces.
And it's because of this unparalleled mastery of the Samadhi fire that he's known as the foremost in the West.
That's quite a title. Foremost in the West.
It really is. So understandably, after seeing even Sun Wukong forced back by his fire, Red Boy feels pretty good about herself. He confidently heads back into his cave, throws a big feast, enjoys some victory music.
His confidence seems pretty justified at this point. He's just seriously challenged the seemingly unbeatable great sage equal to heaven.
After Wukong's defeat.
Right after he gets beaten.
Yeah. And like you said, the Samadhi fire, it's got unique qualities. That's how Red Boy managed it, even against Wukong.
So what happens next? The talking starts, right?
The dialogue, yeah. Between Wukong, Pigsy, and Sandy. And it really shows you how they're all reacting differently.
Oh, I bet. And Pigsy.
He doesn't mince words. He's basically teasing Wukong, saying he wasn't easy, didn't read the room, essentially.
Didn't recognize how dangerous it was for stubbornly fighting.
Exactly. He thought Wukong should have known better than to engage like that. It really shows Pigsy's you know, survival instinct.
Is that pretty typical for Pigsy? Always thinking about self-preservation?
Oh, absolutely. It's a core part of his character throughout the whole journey. But what's interesting here is Wukong's first reaction.
Yeah. What's he thinking?
His pride is definitely wounded. You can feel it. He's more caught up comparing his fighting skills, like fist-to-fist with the demons.
Rather than thinking about the fire itself.
Precisely. He's not focused on why he lost, just that he lost the fight. It's that warrior mindset, you know?
Right, right. But then Sandy steps in. He's usually the calmer one.
Yes, Sandy. Often quiet, but observant. He makes the crucial point.
Which is?
He says, look, okay, maybe the demon's actual weapon skills aren't as good as Wukong's. Sure. But the fire, that's the deciding factor here.
It's the X factor. Not the thing that changes the whole equation.
Exactly. The elemental power is what tipped the scales. And then Sandy brings up something really important.
Oh, okay.
He introduces the concept of Kel.
The five elements idea. Mutual generation and overcoming.
That's the one. It's huge in Chinese philosophy, right? Affects everything from medicine to, well, fighting demons, apparently.
So some elements help each other, others cancel each other out.
Sort of, yeah. They promote growth or control each other. And Sandy specifically says, you know, the classic one, water overcomes fire.
That's like the big aha moment, isn't it?
It really is.
Wukong subtly gets it. It's not just about fighting harder. It's about strategy. Using the elements.
And that immediately leads to his plan. Go get water. Specifically from the Dragon King of the Eastern Sea.
It's a neat shift, isn't it? From just relying on his own power to thinking about, well, natural forces and principles.
Absolutely. It's about leveraging external help, understanding the system. You could even see it as a wider lesson, maybe, about problem solving.
Yeah, moving beyond just direct force to a more strategic approach, understanding the underlying dynamics.
And what about Pigsy and Sandy? They just wait.
They agree to wait, yeah. But Pigsy, he's still Pigsy. He actually worries that if Wukong brings back rain, it might damage their luggage.
Huh. Always practical. Even with magical fire and dragons involved, gotta protect the bags.
It keeps things grounded, I guess. So Wukong has a plan. He needs to get to the Eastern Sea. Fast.
And he doesn't waste any time. The description of his journey is super quick. What's interesting is it mentions he totally ignores the scenery.
Doesn't care about the beautiful ocean views?
Nope. Just focused. Shows how urgent things are. He's not sightseeing.
He's on a mission.
Right. And we see him use his own magic too. A water parting spell.
Yes.
Oh, so he can control water himself.
In certain ways, yes. He parts the sea to get down there. But clearly, he needs more water, or maybe a different kind, for this specific fire.
Okay. And does he just waltz into the Dragon King's palace?
Not quite. A sea yaksha on patrol spots him, alerts the Dragon King, so there's a bit of protocol.
Sets things up for a big meeting, then.
Definitely. The meeting with Ao Guang, the Dragon King, sounds quite grand. The text lists his whole entourage, dragon sons, grandsons, shrimp soldiers, crab generals, the works.
A proper royal court under the sea.
Exactly. It shows the Dragon King's status.
But Wukong's not there for ceremony, is he?
Not at all. Straight to business. I need water. Demon fire. Gotta save my master.
Direct. I like it. What does the Dragon King say? Can he just make it rain?
Well, here's the catch. Bureaucracy. Even for dragons.
You're kidding. Red tape underwater?
Sorta. The Dragon King explains he can't just whip up rain whenever he wants. He needs, get this, an imperial decree.
From who?
The Jade Emperor, up in heaven. It involves celestial ministers, coordinating wind, clouds, thunder, lightning, the whole meteorological department.
Wow, that sounds complicated. Especially when you just need to put out a fire now.
Right. It shows this whole structure, even governing the weather. Is that sort of celestial inefficiency a theme you see elsewhere in the novel?
That's a great point. Yeah, the celestial bureaucracy often seems a bit rigid. Bound by rules. You definitely see Wukong getting frustrated with it later on, too.
I can imagine. He seems pretty impatient here. He just wants plain old rainwater, right? Not a whole divine thunderstorm.
Exactly. Just turn on the tap, basically. But the Dragon King individually can't just do that.
So the Dragon King has another idea. A workaround, maybe. He suggests getting his brothers involved.
The other Dragon Kings.
Yeah.
South, Northwest Seas.
Yep. The idea being maybe together their combined power could generate enough water. Perhaps bypassing some of that official process, strengthen numbers.
Makes sense. How does Wukong take that suggestion?
Well, Wukong, being Wukong, cracks a joke. He says it'd probably be quicker to fly up and ask the Jade Emperor himself than to go visit three other Dragon Kings one by one.
Ah, classic Wukong. Impatient, cheeky, always ready to point out the absurdity.
But the Dragon King has a faster way to summon them. He strikes this big iron drum and golden bell.
Oh, like a signal.
Exactly. A way to call his brothers quickly, shows he is willing to help, and he has the authority to rally them fast.
And here they come.
Like lightning. Or, well, like dragons. Ayo Kin, Ayo Run, Ayo Shun, South, North, West. They all show up super fast.
Ready to help?
Totally enthusiastic once they hear Wukong's story. It shows, you know, the respect Wukong commands, even if he is a bit rough around the edges sometimes. Alliances matter.
So now they have four Dragon Kings. What about an army? Does he get soldiers too?
Oh, does he ever? The text goes into this amazing, almost poetic description of the aquatic army they assemble.
Like what?
Everything. Sharks, sturgeons, carp, eels, mackerel, bream. Even mention specific roles, like turtles as counselors, tortoises as strategists, alligators as prime ministers.
Wow, that's incredibly detailed. A whole underwater military command structure.
It really paints a picture. Crabs, shrimps, catfish, all rallying. There's even a verse summarizing how eager they all are to help. It feels like a really big deal.
A major mobilization. So Wukong's got his water power now. Back to the fight.
He leads this massive dragon force back towards Red Boy's cave. But he's smart about it.
How so?
He tells the Dragon Kings, stay up in the clouds. Stay hidden for now.
Oh. Well, doesn't he want to just drench the place immediately?
Nope. It shows his confidence, maybe his pride again. He wants another crack at the demon himself first.
Right. On his own terms.
Yeah. And it's tactical too, right? Don't reveal your big weapon immediately.
Good point. So the dragons are the backup plan.
Exactly. The plan is Wukong fights. If the demon uses that Samadhi fire again, then Wukong signals and the dragons unleash the flood.
Okay, the stage is set. Does he check back in with Pigsy and Sandy?
He does. Pops back down to the pine forest where they're waiting.
What's the mood there?
Pigsy immediately asks, are the Dragon Kings here? You can almost hear the anxiety. Is this actually going to work?
He needs reassurance.
And Wukong gives it, confirms they're ready, then gives one last instruction.
Which is?
Protect the luggage from the rain that's coming.
Huh. Still worried about the bags.
Yeah.
Even with an army of dragons overhead.
Never forget the practicalities. But Sandy says something reassuring to Wukong. A bit of support before the big moment.
Good. Teamwork.
Shows they trust his plan, or at least they trust him. They're banking on this elemental counter working. Wukong's back at Red Boy's lair. He's got one goal. Get his master back now.
And Red Boy. His reaction is just complete defiance, zero fear. He doesn't just refuse. The source actually quotes him calling Tripitaka the master
his what now?
Yeah, no. It basically means like a snack to have with drinks.
No way, a snack.
Seriously, just treats a holy monk like an appetizer. This is a chillingly casual insult. Shows you exactly how much respect he has, which is none.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, total disrespect. Wukong's obviously not having that. Fight's on.
Right. And the text describes that first clash. Wukong's got a staff. Red Boy has this fiery spear, the Iti.
And how does that go initially?
Well, what's interesting is the source says they fought for 20 rounds. 20. And it describes their skill as basically evenly matched.
Evenly matched. Wukong with this demon kid.
For 20 rounds, yeah. It tells you Red Boy isn't just some pushover in a straight fight. He's got serious skills.
Okay, so 20 rounds, deadlock. Red Boy must realize a slugfest isn't going to cut it. He needs his ace in the hole.
Exactly. He shifts gears. He punches himself in the nose.
Twice. Yep. And then bam. From his nose and mouth, these intense red flames just erupt. And smoke, too. Thick smoke. Plus, this thing at the gate, a fire cart, the heat, it flares up, too.
Whoa. So he's like weaponized his own body into a furnace.
Yeah.
Triggered by a punch.
Pretty much. It's not just fire breathing. It's this innate power erupting out.
Okay. Inferno unleashed. Wukong sees this, thinks, fire needs water. Classic move.
Ah, calls in the cavalry, right?
The Dragon Kings.
The four Dragon Kings, yeah. The Urgenol, he gets them and their water spirits to bring the rain, like a lot of rain.
How much rain are we talking?
The source goes all out describing it, like, oh, buckets, like buckets. No, like emptying the whole Milky Way. You'd absolutely think that drowns any fire.
You really would. That should work. Mm. But here's the twist, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. The rain makes it worse.
Worse. Like pouring oil on the fire. That's the phrase the text uses. Instead of putting it out, the water just fuels it, makes it rage even harder.
Okay, that doesn't make sense. Why would water make fire worse?
This is the crucial part. The source explains it. The Dragon King's rain, it only works on ordinary mundane fire.
Ordinary fire.
But Red Boy's fire, that's Samadhi true fire. It's a whole different beast. It's like magical, spiritual fire. And that kind of fire, normal water can't touch it.
Samadhi true fire. Got it. So it's supernatural. The usual rules just don't apply.
Exactly. Completely different category.
So a big counterattack fails. Wukong, though, he doesn't back down easily. He tries to push through the fire anyway.
He does. Staff ready, tries to press the attack into the flames.
Yeah.
But it's not actually the heat that gets him.
No. What then?
The demon sprays a mouthful of smoke right in Wukong's face. And this is where it all goes wrong for Wukong. This is the vulnerability.
The smoke, not the fire.
The smoke. The text says his eyes start burning, he gets dizzy, tears stream.
But wait a minute, this is Wukong. The guy forged in the 8-triogram furnace, the Ote, during the havoc in heaven. He got his fiery eyes, golden gaze, the Ong, from that. He's supposed to be immune to fire. How can smoke mess him up?
It's fascinating, isn't it? And kind of counterintuitive. The source explains that while the fire in the furnace tempered him, made him immune to flames, gave him those special eyes. The smoke in that same furnace, that actually hurt him back then. It damaged his eyes during the forging.
So the smoke from the furnace left a lasting weakness.
Seems like it. A specific trauma. He can handle the heat, no problem. But that particular kind of magical smoke hits that old injury, that specific vulnerability. Smoke is his kryptonite, basically.
Wow, that's incredible. The thing that made him powerful also left this one hidden flaw. Okay, so the smoke hits him, he can't see, he's got to get out. He uses his cloud somersault, the shore.
Yep, beats a hasty retreat. But then, maybe panicked from the smoke and heat, he makes another mistake. A really bad one.
What does he do?
He sees a cold stream nearby, a tree. And he jumps in, trying to cool off, soothe the burning.
Cold water on intense heat, that sounds bad.
It's catastrophic. The source says the sudden cold traps all that intense samadhi fire heat inside him. His energy, his gets blocked. Instantly knocked unconscious.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
The description is grim. The combination of the magical smoke fire exposure and the cold shock just shuts him down.
That's terrifying. From invincible hero to nearly dead in moments.
A seemingly logical move, cool down, almost kills him because the forces involved are just way beyond normal physics.
Okay, but he's not alone. The Dragon Kings see this happen. They call for backup.
They do. They shout for Zhu Baji and Sha Sengli, the Tiro, and Fi, who were hanging back a bit.
Keeping a low profile, maybe?
Probably wise.
Yeah.
Anyway, they rush over and find Wukong just floating downstream, lifeless.
How do they react?
Sha Seng is, well, Sha Seng, he's devastated. Totally thinks Wukong's dead. He's lamenting, you know, the immortal Monkey King cut down in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
Calls him the wool all turned into a Jew. Who heartbroken.
Heartbroken. And Baji, I bet he's different.
Yeah. Baji's reaction is classic Baji. A bit dismissive, maybe a little mocking. Says Wukong is probably faking it.
Faking death.
Well, but then he says something important. He reminds Sha Sang about Wukong's Wufase, the 72 transformations. He says that means Wukong has 72 lives. He's basically saying, calm down. It takes more than this to kill Monkey.
So he's more practical about it. Does he actually do anything?
He does. He doesn't just stand there. The text mentions this specific technique he uses. All Hull, a massage Zen method.
A massage?
Sort of. He rubs his hands together, gets them warm, then massages Wukong's pressure points. Focuses on the 7 orifices.
And does that work against near death by magical fire and cold shock?
Amazingly, yes. The massage clears the blockage. Oh, the energy flows again, opens the passages. Wukong gasps, comes back.
Wow, Baji saves the day with a massage technique. What's the first thing Wukong says?
His very first word, master.
Even then. Right back to the mission.
Instantly. His focus is incredible. But he also knows what just happened. He says, Ovli Woodjake. Old son has taken a loss. He admits defeat, flat out.
He knows he was beaten. So what happens next? They dismiss the Dragon Kings, I guess. Their water didn't help anyway.
Right. They thank them and send them off. Wukong's still recovering, obviously. The text mentions he's feeling it. Soothe. Muscles sore, aches everywhere. He realizes the injury's bad enough. He can't even do his cloud somersault properly.
Can't even fly properly. That's serious for him.
It leads to this moment of clarity for him. He understands this demon, Red Boy, and his samadhi true fire. It's just too much. More than he can handle alone. And more than ordinary powers, like the Dragon Kings, can handle either.
He's hit his limit. His usual toolkit isn't enough.
Exactly. So he knows they need bigger guns. He decides they have to seek help from someone much higher up.
Who does he figure can handle Samadhi True Fire?
Guanyin Bodhisattva. He realizes only someone at that level of spiritual power stands a chance against this kind of magic.
Makes sense. But he's injured, can't travel fast, so someone else needs to make the trip.
And guess who steps up?
Let me guess. Not Bhaji. He usually avoids the hard jobs.
Surprisingly, yes. Bhaji volunteers. Maybe seeing Wukong so vulnerable lit a fire under him, or maybe he just saw how serious things were.
Huh. Good for Bhaji. Does Wukong trust him to handle it?
Well, Wukong's still sharp, even injured. He gives Bhaji very specific instructions. Don't just barge in, bow low. Crucially, do not look up at the Bodhisattva. State their location precisely. Name the demon, explain they need help rescuing the master. Protocol matters.
Right. Gotta approach Guanyin the right way. Can't have Bhaji messing it up.
Exactly. Wukong knows Bhaji can be impulsive. So he lays out the exact steps, emphasizes the respect needed.
Okay. So Bhaji gets his instructions.
And off he goes, hops on a cloud, heads south towards Guanyin's mountain.
So, Red Boy, he thinks he's won. What's going through his head right after that fight?
Well, he's feeling pretty pleased with himself, obviously. Thinks he's really done a number on Wukong.
Like, job done.
Sort of. The text gives us his internal thought, almost like he's talking to himself. Sun Wukong has taken a beating, he thinks. He might not be dead, but he's definitely stunned.
Okay.
I bet he'll go get reinforcements. So even in victory, he's already thinking ahead.
Okay. So he underestimates Wukong a bit, thinking he's just stunned. But he does expect him to call for backup.
Exactly. And that underestimation is key. It shows he doesn't fully grasp Wukong's, you know, sheer persistence and ingenuity.
Right.
Power isn't everything.
Right. You got to know your enemy. So he anticipates this call for help. Where does he think Wukong or maybe the others will go?
Well, he looks at the map, metaphorically speaking, considers their journey, and he figures, okay, the south, that's the only place left they'd logically go for serious help. And he specifically zeroes in on Guanyin Bodhisattva. He thinks it's certain that they would invite Guanyin Bodhisattva. And he probably assumes it'll be Bhaji who goes.
Bhaji, Pigsy.
Right.
Why him?
Maybe sees him as the one more likely to panic or seek outside help first. Anyway, that's his assumption.
Okay, so based on that assumption, he comes up with this incredibly bold plan. He's not just going to wait for Guanyin.
Nope. He's going to intercept whoever goes and how by pretending to be Guanyin.
Wow. That takes some serious nerve. And smarts, I guess. What does that tell us about him?
It shows he's more than just a brute. He's cunning. He's using psychological tactics. The text even mentions he knew which road to the South Sea was near and which was far.
Ah, so he knows the routes. He can pick the best spot to intercept.
Precisely. He's using his knowledge, anticipating their moves, and planning to exploit their faith, their reliance on Guanyin. It's deliberately misleading.
And it sets up that perfect dramatic irony, doesn't it? We know it's a fake, but poor Bhaji.
Poor Bhaji indeed. He's probably still smarting from that fire attack, desperate to save his master. He's flying along.
And suddenly sees this figure he totally trusts.
Yeah, the text says, how could he distinguish the real from the fake? This is what it means to see an image and take it for the Buddha. He's just so relieved and anxious he doesn't question it.
Oh, man. It's that thing, right? When you want something to be true so badly, you kind of ignore the warning signs.
Totally. A very human reaction, even for a pig demon.
So what happens? How does Red Boy, dressed as Guanyin, actually reel him in?
It's classic manipulation. He pretends to be surprised. Bhaji isn't with the Tang monk. Shows concern.
Plays the part.
Perfectly. Then he offers this seemingly simple solution. He says something like, look, you just get up, follow me into the cave. I'll talk to the Demon King for you. You just need to apologize, be polite, and he'll let your master go.
He makes it sound so easy. Just a little misunderstanding they can smooth over.
Exactly. And he's playing on Bhaji's desire for a quick fix. Bhaji's probably thinking, great, no more fighting. Just say sorry, get the master back. He even offers to kowtow.
Of course he does. And naturally, it's a trap.
Absolutely. The moment Bhaji steps inside the cave, trusting this fake Guanyin, bam, the other demons jump him.
And that's it. He's caught.
Swiftly. The demons all shouted at once, seized Bhaji, and stuffed him into the sack. Just like that.
Ouch. And what does Red Boy plan to do with him? Just keep him prisoner?
Oh, it's much worse than that. He tells his demon underlings, basically, steam him until he's thoroughly done, and I'll let you guys feast on him.
Whoa. That's dark. Really dark.
It shows his ruthlessness. It's not just about neutralizing Baji as a threat, it's cruel. It's about demoralizing everyone else, too.
Okay, so while Baiji's getting bagged, literally what's happening with Wukong and Shaw Monk? Do they realize something's up?
They do. They're waiting, probably getting anxious.
This weird wind kicks up, a bit sinister.
Uh-huh.
And Wukong immediately gets this bad feeling. You know, he's worried Pigsy's maybe lost his way, or worse.
Run into trouble. Another demon, baby.
Exactly. And what's interesting is Wukong's probably still aching from, you know, whatever happened before this.
Oh, for sure. But his first thought is Pigsy. It really shows how that group dynamic is shifting, strengthening.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sandy, Shaw Sing, he offers to go check. He's reliable like that.
Always the steady one.
But Wukong says no. Uh-uh. He insists he has to go, even though he's clearly in pain.
That determination, that sense of responsibility, it's just core Wukong, isn't it?
It really is. So, okay, he heads off towards the Fire Cloud Cave, and, well, no surprise.
He gets there, and bam, hostility.
Right away. The minor demons, the minions there, they're not rolling out the welcome mat.
No. And this happens a lot, actually. Wukong runs into these, like, frontline guys first.
Makes him have to think, not just fight.
Exactly. He can't always just, you know, brute force his way through. Especially here. He knows he's tired.
So what does he do? Classic Wukong move.
He pulls a transformation trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He turns himself into
a gold embroidered pouch just lying there by the road.
Super clever. Because the demons find it.
And they totally fall for it. Maybe Wukong ran off or got beaten already.
Right. It plays right into their, well, their arrogance, maybe. They just don't see it coming.
A common mistake when facing Wukong.
So they take this bundle back to their boss, Red Boy.
And Red Boy looks at this gold embroidered pouch.
Hey, I can use these. He's planning to repurpose them or something. Completely clueless.
The irony is just brilliant. But Wukong's not finished with the trick.
Oh, no. Not by a long shot. While he's still this package, he makes a fake package.
Yeah. He uses one of his hairs. Makes a decoy bundle that looks just like the one he's supposed to be.
Okay, so there's a fake bundle now.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Then his real self transforms again into a fly this time. Tiny little fly.
And where does he hide?
On the door hinge. Perfectly placed to listen in, unseen.
Masterful deception, really. Layer upon layer.
It is. And from there, as a fly, he hears something familiar.
Don't tell me. Pigsy.
Yep. He hears Pigsy inside, complaining loudly. He's trapped in some kind of leather bag.
Aw, poor Pigsy. What's he saying?
He's furious, saying he got tricked by a fake Guanyin Bodhisattva.
Ah, so that's what happened when he went for help. Red Boy impersonated Guanyin.
Looks like it. And now Pigsy's complaining that he's probably going to be,
eaten. Steamed, maybe.
Pretty much, yeah. Threats of being cooked and eaten.
Oof. But knowing Pigsy, he's probably not just whimpering in there.
Not at all. Even captured, facing, you know, being dinner, he's still got fight in him.
What's he doing?
He's boasting. Talk about how powerful his brother Monkey is, Sun Wukong.
Huh. Even now.
Oh, yeah. And vowing revenge, planning how they'll get back at Red Boy.
Mm.
His spirit is just something else.
It's kind of funny, but also, you know, it shows he hasn't given up. He still believes Wukong can save the day.
Exactly. And Wukong sees this. Hears his brother's defiance, understands the danger.
And gets fired up.
Totally. The text says, old Sun must capture this monster. If he doesn't, how can he avenge this? He's determined now. Rescue Baji, get revenge.
Okay, so Wukong's inside. He's seen Baji. He's motivated. Is he about to spring into action?
Well, just as he's probably planning his move, Red Boy makes another move. One that really ramps things up.
What now?
Red Boy calls for his top guys, his six main lieutenants.
Lieutenants? Do they have names?
Oh, they have names, and they're quite something. You've got Cloud in the Mist.
Okay.
Mist in the Cloud.
A bit repetitive, but okay.
Quick as fire, swift as wind.
Getting faster.
And then stirring the fire and fanning the flames.
Wow. Definitely themed names. Very fiery, like their boss.
Exactly. They fit his whole fiery persona and power.
So why does he call these six? What's their mission?
This is the big escalation. He tells them, go quickly, invite the great king here.
The bull demon king.
His father. And the message is chilling. He wants them to tell his father, I've caught the Tang monk and I'm going to steam him for you to eat. It'll grant you 1,000 years of life.
Whoa. So he's not just bluffing about eating the monk. He's serious. And he's inviting his dad over for the feast.
Dead serious. This makes the situation critical. It's not just about rescuing Baji anymore. The Tang monk's life is directly on the line, and a presumably very powerful ally is being called in.
Okay, that definitely changes the game. What does Wukong do? He's still a fly, right?
He is. And ever the strategist, he sees these six messengers heading out. He makes a quick decision. He buzzes down from the sack, follows the six monsters, and slips out of the cave behind them.
He's going after the messengers, instead of rescuing Baji right away.
Seems like it. Maybe he figures dealing with the incoming Great King is the priority, or maybe he sees an opportunity.